Welcome. You are listening to a multi-part podcast series on the history of Dominican University of California, presented by Campus Ministry. This series has been organized by Sister Mary Sower and is made possible through the joint effort of Campus Ministry, the Communications Department, and Penguin Radio.
Well, good day and welcome, everyone. I'm Sister Mary with the Director of Campus Ministry. And we'd like to thank you for coming to our Spring 2018 Heritage and History Lecture Series. We title our series, We Come to Tell Our Story, because Dominican theologian Father Edward Skillebecs wrote that the story of Dominicans can only be kept alive by live Dominicans. And we at Campus Ministry also believe in the gift of storytelling. And so today we come to hear the story of Marianne Stickle, the registrar of the university. So Marianne, thank you, and we look forward to hearing your story.
Thank you. I'm so glad to see people here. I really appreciate it. Sister Carla just came in. So I must say, and I have to stay within reach of the microphone, so if I start to wander away, he's going to give me the high sign. So. I feel a little pretentious being up here because it's a lecture series, and I'm not a lecturer. Really, I am not. I'm not an expert. But since Mary invited me to tell stories and assured me that storytelling was kosher, I said, okay. And I was just thanking her for inviting me because it's been a great experience to reflect back on stories that, at least for me and my heart and my mind, are connected. But I have to say, it's really more like a collection of short stories than it is a novel. I don't know the ending yet. I'm still in the middle of it. I don't have clarity. I don't have a plot. But right along with me, maybe some of the things that I'm going to share will be familiar to you. We have some common experiences, or not, that we could discuss. I've been the registrar here since 2002, so 16 years this January. I'm a wife and mother of four grown children, two of whom are Dominican alums like myself. And before I was a registrar, which is my third career, I was a dance teacher and a small business owner. I was a cantor and a director of liturgy and music in the Oakland Diocese for about 10 years. And then, through somewhat remarkable circumstances, I ended up at Dominican. So I'd like to share that with you. Okay. It's September 11th, 2001, 9/11. I'm driving over to Dominican because I'm working for Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco. It's a distance ed program in humanistic psychology. And I'm coming to Dominican to Santa Sabina Retreat Center, which is where Saybrook conducts its orientations and residential conferences. I'm sitting at the foot of the Richmond Bridge waiting to turn on that last entrance when the first plane hits the Twin Towers. And my first thought at that point, because it was one plane, it seemed, you know, a fluke, an accident, whatever, was, I hope my son is okay. I have a son who lives in Queens. And I knew that he had a couple of callback auditions that morning in Midtown. And I thought, boy, I hope everything turns out fine. Well, by the time I got here, the second plane had hit the second tower. Pennsylvania had happened. The Pentagon had happened. And my job was to get with the other staff of Saybrook and try to help steer our folks through the morning. There were 50 people from all across the country in the retreat center, many of whom had come from the East Coast and were madly, frantically trying to reach their loved ones in New York. One of the faculty members had a sister in the Twin Towers that day. Another one had a husband on Wall Street. So my job was to help with triage and not to sort of think about my own issues. But my son was on my mind. So when I had a break, I thought, okay, I've got to try to see if he's okay. But if you've ever tried to make a phone call from out here at the foot of this hill, reception is not too good. So I was dialing and dialing. I couldn't get through. And of course, everybody was trying to call New York that day. So I thought, now he's not going to know that I'm off my regular schedule. I wasn't in the office that day in the city. I was here. So I thought, I'll call and check my message machine at the office and see if he's left me a message there. So I did that, and I'm pounding through. I had 10 or 12 messages, totally irrelevant to that day. And one of them was one that said, "Hello, Marianne, this is Dr. David Bears. I'm the Vice President for Enrollment at Dominican University of California, and I would like to invite you to apply for our registrar position." I'll stop there. That was the call. So think about this. My feet are on Dominican soil. 9/11 has happened and is still happening. We don't know where it's going to end, how far it's going to go, what's going to be happening. And I got the call to apply, and I was already here. And I thought, I think I need to work at Dominican. But I couldn't think about it very much then. So it took a couple of months to sort of pull things together and wait till planes were flying again and all that. But when I did come in and interview, I decided to stay. But I thought that it's a fairly strange entree into my Dominican experience, but rooted in a kind of a chaotic, somewhat unhappy situation, that's been a theme throughout my time here. So I'd like to share with you just a few things about my start. I'd like to tell you about my first day. I got to Dominican the first day of spring semester 2002. My job that day was to shadow Sherry Volk, who was the academic vice president, and Michelle Hansen, who was the acting registrar. So, first thing that happened was 12 academically dismissed students are coming in frantically needing to be readmitted because the letters they did not yet receive about their having been dismissed had not been mailed until the previous Friday, and as always, it was a Martin Luther King three-day weekend, so nobody who had been dismissed got their letters. So that whole morning was spent bringing people back in, assuring them it would be okay, getting them registered, finding them classes, and so on. My office wasn't yet ready, so I was sharing with someone else who was going to be leaving in about 6 weeks. I was invited to go to lunch with my boss over at Calarega, only to find out that I was losing 3 staff members on day one. The schedules, class schedules, for summer and fall 2002 were not yet ready, but they were due in 5 weeks, and I had to produce them on a software that I've never used before. A week later, I went to my first President Executive Council meeting, expecting to be warmly welcomed, which I was, but I left with my papers in my hand. I had the charge. Everyone at the top of their lungs was saying, "Your job is to bring DegreeWorks online. We bought it 5 years ago. It is still not working." Dr. Bears used to call it an oxymoron, that it really didn't work, so why did we call it DegreeWorks? That was our degree audit system at the time. And I had no uncertain news that I was supposed to deliver this thing. I think at this point I better put my glasses on. I'm mentioning this rocky start because, well, maybe it's really just to justify the time I've spent in therapy working out my attraction to chaotic and dysfunctional organizations. But really, and looking back at it, it's because a lot of my Dominican experience is grounded in messy human reality. And there's something about that that demands something of me. And I like to rise to that challenge. You might call it sick. Sometimes I think it's sick, but it was definitely a call to bring my best because they needed help here. So how do I relate to the Dominican ethos and mission? Well, I'm a lifer. I was baptized at 2 weeks of age and was deeply professionally Catholic until my early 40s, my last ministry position. Got 12 years of Catholic education and secondary education. I was a choir member from the age of 8, a Cantor School graduate, got a BA in Religious Studies from Holy Names College. I know we don't like to mention them here, but it's my alma mater, and several ministry positions in the Oakland Diocese. So I speak the language. I speak that language of history, tradition, iconography. I think that the sacraments, incarnation, redemption, service, community, and yes, a little dysfunction wrapped up in all of it is part of my Catholic experience. My education, this is the church in Berkeley where I grew up and was baptized, and where my father also grew up and was baptized. Presentation High School is now a residence for University of California professors and students. But that was my high school, and it was directly across the street from my elementary school. So for 12 years, I went to the same place every day and had the Presentation Sisters. Later on, Holy Names College. There was a big gap in there. I didn't go immediately to college, but when I came back later, that's where I went. I was getting my degree in religious studies. I think that my gratitude for the grounding in liberal arts tradition and secular humanism and religious studies is really what motivates me to stay in and to try to bring my best. I think that's how I express my gratitude. I, like many people of my gender, took a departure from active ministry and practice when my discomfort with working in and representing a highly dysfunctional organization began to outweigh what anything I felt I was contributing in my ministry. That was a tough one, and it's taken me about 20 years to have the ability to say that in a sentence. It's deep and profound when you step away from something that's been in your lifeblood. During my last parish assignment, which was in Oakland, I was began working at Holy Names College, where I had just graduated, began working part-time in the registrar's office. And eventually, not too long, maybe within a year, that experience filled the gap that I was needing. I find that, in a sense, a ministry in higher education is much more palatable to me and more fulfilling and less political than liturgy and music where I had been. So my Dominican stories, I have to say, everything is grounded. Study, reflection, community, service, the quest for truth, beauty, justice, love for the earth, the dialogical message conducted with compassion and respect for the other that underlines the unique version of preaching that the Dominicans define. So these are the threads that run through my stories. And I have to say, I can't separate the personal and the religious from the educational, from the community, from the service. It's really all very interwoven. I was sitting in Forest Meadows 2003 May commencement, and I was so envious of those graduate students walking up there and getting their degrees. I had put my own education aside after the BA, raised a family, and I really wanted to get back. My brain needed a little exercise too. So I decided that one way I could sort of deepen my Dominican experience would be to become a student and really engage in the university and in learning at a different level. Up until then, my interaction with faculty members had been, did you get your grades in on time? What's an academic petition? How do I drop a student from my class? That kind of thing. And that just wasn't doing it for me. So I joined the Masters of Humanities. And for me, that program, I could put up a brochure that defines the program, but for me, this was the program. It was the people, the faculty, those folks, and many of them you'll see faces here that you recognize, are deeply imbued with Dominican tradition and experience. For me, the MA was really a playground. Literature, art history, philosophy, gender studies, humanism, psychology, religion, Dante, Chaucer, William James, Thomas Aquinas, I just basked in it. My student experience here gave me a new relationship with a whole group of faculty, and I really deepened my appreciation for the Dominican legacy and for the university itself. Dante on the left, it looks like Sister Erin on the right, but it's really Virgil posing as Sister Erin. So in November of 2004, I lost my youngest sister to breast cancer. She was 39. Her name was Kathy. I was grieving her, still grieve her, as you can see, so deeply. And the idea of taking a class that semester was not very exciting to me. I thought, how am I going to distract myself from everything I'm going through and try to pay attention? Maybe it would be a good distraction, but I really wanted some material that I could delve into. So Dante was my choice, because I felt with Dante, it would allow me to reflect on and explore the grief, the loss, the meaning of life and love, and some vision of the afterlife. What I didn't expect to find in that class was a new relationship with a classmate and his wife, who remain our dearest friends today, 13 years later. That was an unexpected gift in a time of loss and sadness, and it was solidified by our trip to Fanzhou later that year, but more on that in a bit. So Dante, it was the most intense course I have ever taken, the hardest I have ever worked as a student. I can remember sitting on my sofa at home with a Purgatorio in my hands and a veritable dashboard surrounding me. I had a Guide to the Divine Comedy, I had a theological dictionary, I had notes on Florentine politics, I had the essential Virgil and a Latin dictionary, and from time to time a variety of other things. It was really likely the only subject that could have really held my interest and kept me engaged during such a tough time. Sister Erin, the instructor, personified grace, intelligence, and academic rigor, and I never really did learn to write a good thesis sentence. I apologize. Somehow she managed to get us through all of that material despite her own illness that semester, and we were limited by the 2-hour maximum in class time per week to try to manage all of the cantos in Dante. Not easy. I healed a lot in that semester, and I got the chance to walk vicariously through hell, purgatory, and heaven, which was just what I needed at the time. That same spring semester of 2005, I applied for a grant to accompany a Dominican group on a small trip to Fanzhou. I'm sorry, the annual trip to Fanzhou. My desire, and really it was my need, to go to Fanzhou that year actually came from a really shattering experience I had on campus. I got into a tangle with the then president and came very close to losing my job. I felt vulnerable and expendable, and I knew that I had to find a reason to stay. My Dominican experiences otherwise had been rich and meaningful, and I knew I didn't want to leave. I was planning to devote my master's thesis to the Dominican tradition as is lived out in San Rafael today, so I wrote my application and I got the grant. My husband wanted to go along too, so we signed up. Susan DeHaas, who's in the middle of that group on the top left, was the faculty grant recipient that year, and I think we had a fair number of students, 6 or 8, maybe more, that went together. I learned in the Dante class that my friend Gary was also going to Fanzhou and with his wife. And we knew that our spouses were not going to be as deeply engaged in some of the exchanges and the learning experiences as we would be. So I suggested that we get together for lunch ahead of time and see how we all got along, because I figured my husband Paul and Gary's wife Diana would need to have somebody to talk to when we were in class or doing our activities. It was a good instinct. These are the friends for life. Bottom right, Gary and Diana. See Sister Patty up there in the chair too? I don't know what they're doing to you, Patty. Something. It was probably skit night, right? The Cathar Registrar. You didn't put that picture up. It's not very clear. In Fanzhou, I also had a chance to see a different side of Patty than I had experienced before. Part den mother, part travel guide and translator, part hostess and cure royale provider, part mountain climber, part warden, and mostly devoted friend and teacher to us all. Patty and Sister Jean Murray, I believe, nope, sorry, I scooped myself. She was before. Sister Jean Murray, bottom right, who was herself recovering from cancer on that trip, shared their love for Dominicans' mission, for French culture, and for teaching and learning with all of us. The exchange opportunities with other staff and faculty from other Dominican institutions, and the incredible outings to Pruy, to the Pyrenees, to Toulouse, to Albi, the caves at Nyo, Carcassonne, Cordes-sur-Ciel, Coulure, and Paris, a once-in-a-lifetime experience grounded in Dominican roots. I had a lot of travel opportunities while I've been here. Take advantage of them yourselves if you haven't. Dominicans in China. The following year, as part of the MA program, I had the opportunity to go with a group of 59 Dominican students, staff, faculty, and alums to China. It was 2006. It was a trip that was painstakingly planned and lovingly led by my dear friend Jenny Lee, a Shanghai native. She was our institutional research director at the time and a dear friend of Sister Adele. Jenny said that this trip was her way of introducing her adopted country to her mother country. In Beijing, I had the opportunity to visit Peking University and spend time with one of my heroines. This is Dr. Yue Dayun. She's a comparative literature professor whose memoir, To the Storm, I had just read. Her book recounts her family's shattering experiences and suffering through the Cultural Revolution as members of the scholarly class in a time when such educated people were a threat to the socialist regime. Jenny had arranged an appointment as a surprise just for me, so the two of us got in a taxi, left everyone else at the Forbidden City, and went to Peking University while the others toured Beijing. This is Jenny on the right with a little girl in a peasant village that we visited. And you see, I don't know if you can see them, that's the terracotta warriors behind me then in Xi'an. Later on in the trip, in Shanghai, Jenny had arranged for each person or small group to be hosted for a full day by a young student from a local teacher's college, Shanghai Normal University. That was so we could experience Shanghai from a native resident's point of view. Vanessa, who could text with one hand with her phone in her pocket, don't know how she did that, still don't to this day, took us on a city tour, and then we went to her auntie and uncle's house for a meal of homemade dumplings. It was difficult to communicate well. They had about 3 words of English. We had about 3 words of Mandarin. But we admired their precious art and Ming-era furnishings, that painting there behind them. They lost everything in the Cultural Revolution. They had to replace or repurchase absolutely everything for their homes, everything that they loved. So we spent the evening with them. And my husband and I were trying to think of what to bring along as a little gift, you know, a little emissary kind of gift. So we had some coffee from Northern California. We had some Jelly Bellies. But my husband had brought along his backpacking guitar on that trip. He brings them on most trips. And we thought, you know, a gift of live music from America might be an exotic gift for them. We could at least sing a couple songs and have some fun. So we did that. And the strangest thing, was just pulling up from memory a couple of songs. One was Country Roads by John Denver, and the other was Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash. Now, these were just randomly. They were the first things to pop up. But here's what happened. Again, one of these strange coincidences. That week, Walk the Line had just opened in Shanghai. So the fact that Paul could play from memory the song from that movie was, he was a rock star. The second thing was he played Country Roads, and just the week before, in the Chinese version of American Idol, the guy who won had sung Country Roads by John Denver. And what we learned there, what you need to know is, we hear about China or the Chinese referring only to the government. We don't get a chance to experience the people, their culture, their history, things that mean a lot to them. That trip changed that forever for me. It was really eye-opening and really wonderful. Wow, am I there already? Yes, I am. In 2012, there was a request for proposals that came out from Dominican University and River Forest, and they were doing their biannual Dominican colloquium, and the theme that year was the contemplative vision. And it really, you know, the Dominicans have a really interesting spin on some of these things. Contemplation in this sense did not mean sitting alone, you know, meditating. It meant, how do you allow for moments of contemplation and the practice of contemplation in your teaching, in your work, in your life? So it was great. This is, Diane Kennedy, I believe, the president then. Had a wonderful time there. It was through Sister Carla's and Father Bob's encouragement that I decided to go, because I wasn't sure I had anything to say. I was working on my master's thesis, which really was about Dominican culture and how different our Dominican is from most of the other still Dominican named and operated universities in California. We were about, I would say, 40 years out from our having become an independent university, not sponsored and operated by the sisters solely. And I think we were the only ones. So I wanted to share something about that and what our journey had been like. I'm not going to share a whole lot of that with you because it becomes scholarly and That's not really what I wanted to share today, but I'll talk a little bit. But that fabulous spiral staircase is in their library. And can you see the seal at the bottom? It's a little bit obscured by the flash, but that's their university seal. So right in the middle of the library is this wonderful spiral. Goes up, goes down. Wonderful symbol about learning and coming back. And it was great. Of course, I'm holding a glass of wine, but that's because we were at a reception. Parts of my presentation there included this statement from the Sisters of San Rafael about their wishes and fervent prayers for the university that we would stay connected and, you know, respect the legacy. And if you don't know, do you know who these women are up here?
Sister Sam and Sister Aquinas.
Sister Samuel Conlon, after whom Conlon is named. She was the president, probably did every other thing here too in her time. And Sister Aquinas Nimitz, who also was here still when I arrived. Actually, they both were. They've both passed on now. But just great, wonderful women. Sister Aquinas was a resident botanist here, and a lot of the flora that you see around campus is because of her, the variety. The end of my presentation was Mary's inaugural address, that part from it that really emphasized going forward with our legacy intact. And I think it still is. That's now, gosh, 7 years ago. Yeah. And then the other thing I had done, which you might find interesting, I'm not sure, a book had come out fairly recently to this time that was looking at the variation in Catholic higher education across the United States. And they were trying to find different categories to put institutions in. And so I won't go into it a lot, but the immersion one are institutions that are fully, deeply Catholic, owned and operated by religious orders, and that basically admit mostly Catholic students and have a very, very religious and academic experience tied together. The other three are various versions on that. Some that have had to make their way and stay in business financially by admitting more and more non-Catholic students, students of other faiths. I looked at a variety of aspects about our Dominican to see where we fit on this map, and we're all over the place, like many schools are. If you want to know more about it, the paper's in the library. You're welcome to look at it, but that's all I'll say for now. Pardon me. The Dominican Colloquium in 2012 fell right smack in the middle of the, what shall I call it, campaign against women religious in this country. I don't know if you were aware of it, but they were really under attack. There were, shall we say, the Curia felt that many American women religious were picking the wrong causes and were putting their ministries and their voices behind unapproved sorts of activities and pursuits. Mostly it was women, children, education, and the poor, as always, where Jesus would be if he were here now. Ultimately, that came out in a relatively smooth way. You girls would have to tell us if it's changed your way of living at all. But for me, I'll tell you what it was, and I want to read this because it's important. What I experienced there, talking to the other sisters from all over the country, Blauvelt, Caldwell, gosh, I'm not going to remember all the names, but a whole variety. These women's faith and resilience was astounding to me. I would ask them, what are you going to do? How are you feeling about this? Does your order have a plan? Are you in dialogue? What are you going to do? Here's the message, they said. Well, we know that this work is not ours. It's God's work, belongs to God. So we give it back to God. If we can no longer practice our ministries within the church, we will continue to practice outside of the church. Their deep understanding of their own calling and their commitment to doing the work of Jesus a la Dominic, to something deeper than the institutional church could control or define, strengthened my own resolve to live a life that more deeply reflected my own passion and that exuded love, the search for truth, and respect for others. I have to end with two of the most significant and I think sense experiences that I have at Dominican. One is place, and the other are people. So I'm just going to share with you a few photos that I or my husband have taken over the years. First of places. And let's think of Sister Aquinas and her interest in botany as we do. Does this look familiar to you? All of those icons, the love for the earth, the verdant pastures and meadows and flowers, they say everything about what's important, and they give us a place to be and to reflect and to engage in a surrounding of beauty. The other part of Dominican, for me, is the people and the experiences and the community. We weren't really in jail that year. That was my staff in the upper left. Remember the year that Martha Stewart was in prison for stock trading? We came to the Halloween party that year in orange jumpsuits with gloves and pearls and cupcakes, because the prison she was in, they called Camp Cupcake. It was a minimum security. So we like to have fun here, too. Well, yeah. I've been here a long time, comparatively. Yeah. Work-study students. There's your department chair. Right. Yep. And his wife, Jackie. Bottom left, Wild Man. That's the guy who hired me.
Dave Bears.
Yeah. It was a Christmas party. We were dancing. He was doing that while we were dancing. When I went to his inauguration at St. Mary of the Woods some years later, he was being installed as the president, we made badges, all of us who went from California, made badges with that picture on it, just to keep him humble, remind him of his roots. If you don't know where this is, I'm going to tell you right now. If you stand next to Bertrand Hall, and you're on Acacia, and you look up at the bare trees, you can only see it now for about another month until they go in leaf. There are two branches that intersect. They're not anywhere near each other, but this from this angle, they form this. Now, there isn't pink up there. I had my husband color that in for me, but I've sent it out as a Valentine many times. To me, it's how you look at what's around you, and that's also a Dominican trait. Look for beauty, look for justice, look for people, look for community. And sometimes it just reaches out and grabs you, even when you're not looking. Thank you.